Wrong movie?
Is it Jed? Is it the wrong movie?
I'm pretty sure it is.
Alright, so you're telling me this isn't the Star Wars podcast?
Last time I checked, it's not even December.
Okay. Well, that's disappointing. You've now ruined my intro. Thank you, Chad.
I think you ruined it yourself.
Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Metz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. Chad, it's a Thursday night. We have just walked out of the movie theater. Where and what did we see? Because clearly it wasn't Star Wars.
No, it wasn't Star Wars, and since it's November, that means it was the good old Justice League.
The Justice League of America, Chad?
I mean, it, no.
Or the Justice League of the DCEU?
I think we're going just Justice League. I think just Justice League is fine. No need for the other parts.
So Chad, the last time we left our good friends, the Justice League, they were YouTube videos on a laptop, and one of them was dead.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I actually had to think about that.
Yes. And in the meantime, we got a whole slew of, like, creative issues that plagued this film for its development over the last year. We got a hard PR reboot shortly after Dawn of Justice was released. They flew a bunch of journalists overnight to London to visit the set and have drinks with the Snyders and talk about the changes that were going to be made. A family tragedy befell the Snyders, and the week of the Wonder Woman premiere, they let the world know that Zach would be stepping away and that Joss Whedon would be stepping in. This caused much chaos and confusion on the internet. And then much speculation has abounded. There have been rumors of $300 million budgets, of mandates from studio heads that runtimes need not be in excess of 2 hours. And after all of that dillying and dallying, reflecting on whether or not Ben Affleck would continue to play Batman, we finally got a finished film. So Chad, we're here tonight to talk about that finished film.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the finished film that is Justice League?
So, I thought it was, it's, for me, personally, it's better than good. It's not great by any means, but it's something you will have fun with. It's really simple, but if you're a fan of all of these characters, you will enjoy this movie. So, I enjoyed the movie. It has issues, but it's not terrible. It's actually fun. And we haven't been able to say fun in DC movies very often around these parts.
This is very true. I know this is going to irk you somewhat, so try to keep your seat.
I'm not going nowhere.
This reminded me of watching Batman Forever for the first time.
I wasn't there for that.
Fun, campy, over-the-topness, it's an okay time at the movies. I mean, it's. I need more Wonder Woman in my life. I was reminded why she was so awesome. Although, you know, one thing that has gotten lost in all this, the Wonder Woman hype and love, is the fact that that movie still is pretty much a carbon copy of First Avenger. It's not like they did anything bold or different, it's just that they brought, you know, hope and optimism to the DCEU, and everybody rejoiced. But she is, Wonder Woman is still a standout in a blaze of glory when she's on the screen. She's a force of nature. But, you know, it's a fun time at the movies. It's okay, and it moves. It doesn't slog. It doesn't feel bogged down. But it's an okay movie. I mean, it's not a dumpster fire.
Like that. There's no reason for this movie to be good. It should be a raging inferno of a dumpster fire. And it's not.
One of the things I loved the most was that we get the Everybody Knows song over the prologue. And that was kind of funny to me. Because it's like, the words are literally everybody knows, and we're entering into a movie where, what would you say, 2/3 of the audience, 3/4 of the audience that was seeing that movie tonight knows of the dumpster fire, knows of the creative changes, knows of the plague, and yet here we go. And it's kind of just an interesting way to start your movie.
Of the audience we saw tonight, I don't think it's 2/3. It's probably about half. Only because when I was walking out, I heard a bunch of them talking, and it was clear, like, a lot of them just had no idea about any of this kind of stuff. They were just going to see the Justice League, which is surprising because I'm in this space where it's like everybody knows all this kind of stuff. So I think because we know all the strife with this movie, we can appreciate what this movie turned out to be a lot better. The casual people are just going to go in and like, they're just going to either like the movie or not. And they don't know any of the other stuff, nor do they care.
All right, so let's dive in. What is your good for this movie?
Okay, so my non-critical head is just going to say the opening of the movie, both with Wonder Woman, which was actually really, really awesome, and the Superman thing.
With the kids. Which humanizes him way more than anything that happened in Man of Steel or Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, the if you've watched all these movies, like in Batman vs. Superman, they talk about him sometimes, and they talk about him of being this being of hope. And if you've watched the movies, even me, as somebody that likes the Superman that we have here, it's like, y'all ain't never showed us any of this stuff. Like, Man of Steel was not supposed to show you that. It's supposed to show you a guy trying to come into his own, figure it out, and this
and
is
allow him children to die on a school bus underwater.
Again, this is all part of directing choices, because the whole point of that movie is it's about him claiming his destiny as becoming Superman, and the point of that speech is that you're not ready to show yourself yet. So you have to be careful. Now, what he says is, yeah, you maybe should let the kids die. What he's meaning is, yeah, I know you can't let the kids die, but you can't do what you did. So you're in the quandary. But so if you want to save them, you have to be careful because you're not ready for it. And that's the whole thing with the particularly with Superman and all these movies, is that they talk about the image they want of him, but you never actually see it. And in this movie, yeah, that first scene shows you more about what they've been saying about Superman. It's your first time actually seeing it on screen. And then, that Wonder Woman scene was, as I was sitting there watching it, I was in my head, I'm kind of just bouncing. It was like, they've really made her freaking awesome. Like, she's just the best part of this already, and we're only 10 minutes in.
And we got more of the Wonder Woman theme.
Yeah, a little bit of it. Oh, I got thoughts about themes. Oh, I got thoughts about themes. That'll come later, so y'all can figure out what part I'm going to put that in. But it was, all the characters had moments kind of like that to varying degrees, which is part of the reason why I think everybody's going to like all the characters individually and collectively. So I guess the presentation of the characters is overall my good. There's probably some more, but I'm going to go with that for right now.
Dude bro Aquaman. That is all I have to say for my good. Dude bro Aquaman is awesome, and I can't wait to see James Wan do more with him.
I think that's going to be fun. He was, again, all of them were really good, and he...
And they hint perfectly at his backstory. You know, mommy left me.
Yeah, I know everybody wants these big in-depth reasons, and I get it from a storytelling standpoint. If you knew more about him beforehand, you can care more about his all Atlantis and all that stuff, and it'll have more weight when you get to this movie. But we ain't got that, so they gave you what you needed to know and move on. I don't think I think it'll make you appreciate it more in Aquaman. Also, we can notice that one of the cuts from this movie is most of Atlantis because we didn't even see Willem Dafoe, and who was cast for this movie and is in Aquaman. So we'll just see him in Aquaman, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And Chad, there was a nice cameo in the prologue section, or the let's explain who the villain is section. Would you like to tell the fine folks about that cameo that might or might not give hope to people going forward?
So, they put, I'm pretty sure there are more things than just this, but the thing that stood out to me was, we got a little bit of redemption from a movie that DC put out.
Yeah. 2008.
It was 2010? It might have been 2012. It might have been the same year as, Avengers. I think it was. Because I thought Avengers was going to suck and this movie was going to be good. How wrong I was. We got, in the little explanation piece, we got an actual Green Lantern in this movie. It's not anybody that you know, because if I don't know who it was off the first shot, none of y'all gonna know. So it was just some random Green Lantern. I'll figure out who it was later. We saw him in all his glory, using his green ring in the suit. If I'm telling you there's a Green Lantern, I can also tell you that he dies, and we see the ring fly off his finger, which is of importance to Green Lantern fans, because you know, once you die, your ring flies off and find somebody else suitable to be the next ring bearer. So they said we're getting Green Lantern Corps. This just kind of opens that world up that you actually see. You see the Justice League, and there are Green Lanterns in this world.
And it's a Marvel way of doing things. It's not overt. It doesn't hit you over the head. It's Captain America's shield in Tony Stark's basement.
Yeah, it's...
It's Thor's hammer buried in the desert in New Mexico.
Yeah, it's not out of place because it's a big raging battle with thousands of people on the field.
It's a Lord of the Rings style, the armies of elves and men and, other beings against the orcs. I mean, it's that same similar style. Mm-hmm. And I think, don't hold me to it, but I also think there was not Martian Manhunter, not Conan. Other movie. Big, strong, muscle dude that's been rumored forever.
He-Man?
Not He-Man. DC, Lobo?
Oh, yeah, Lobo.
I think Lobo is also in there. I thought there was a quick shot of him as well. Because there was a really ripped-looking dude who looked like he was a caveman. So that might have been a part of it, too. But the fact that they put a lantern in there and did so quickly, easily, and effortlessly. The fact that they did Dude Bro Aquaman, who just has a laissez-faire attitude and like doesn't care about a whole lot of things, is going to be awesome. The fact they went through and gave you good hints at his backstory without hitting you over the head with it and taking forever was awesome. His lasso of truth moment was just hilarious.
Yeah, it lets you know that he's not just dude, bro. He does care about stuff.
Right. And it's just really well done. It gives you more hope for Aquaman going forward. You definitely want to see more of him going forward.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the theme of this movie. The theme of the actual movie, it's the movie that we saw, and the theme throughout the film is of hope. Like, the movie itself is like, here, you can hope this. Look at this, and I think you will all come out of this having hope for the future of what we want to do, if we still want to do it.
That the world has been plunged into fear and darkness, and the parademons are feasting on that fear, and the only way to rid the world of that fear is to give them their beacon of hope back.
Yes.
So let's go to our not so good. What is your not so good, Chad?
My not so good is that even this, we know that this movie underwent extensive reshoots, and again, for the amount of reshoots we've heard they went through, it's not so overt where the cuts are, but there are moments.
There are CGI moments with very stiff lips.
There are CGI moments that the Superman lip thing. I kind of wonder if I didn't know about it, would it have been...
Noticeable?
As noticeable. Like, because I knew about that first scene. And I knew that the first scene was going to pretty much be, like, close-up of Superman. And it was a reshoot. And because I knew it, and everybody said it was so bad, I was expecting it to be really bad. And when I saw it, I'm like, okay, I know it, but it's not that bad. It's just weird. It's when he's head on. But when he turned his face, it was fine. So, but it's enough that because I knew it, I saw it. So I'm going to have to experiment on somebody that doesn't know any of this stuff. Then there's the stuff like with chubby Ben Affleck, because there are moments where Ben Affleck looks like Ben Affleck from Batman vs. Superman, and then there's moments where it's like,
is that Chris Pratt?
Yeah, it's like, your face's a little bit puffy there, pal. I know that scene with him and Wonder Woman talking, and he's still dressed up in his suit. I know that he's still wearing that part of that suit because he's a little puffy. He doesn't have all them abs ripped up like he did when he shot 6 months earlier. So it's just enough stuff that if you know what went on, you can kind of pinpoint some of the things. And because of that, and you can really tell with some CGI. You can tell it was done last minute and they were rushing. They kind of had to. But then there's some things like, overall, I think Cyborg came out really well. But there's still some parts where it's like, eh. And that it just doesn't look quite right. And him and Steppenwolf, I just wish they would have went a more practical route and then filled in the gaps with CGI so you can hide that kind of stuff better.
Here's my thing. Here's the thing about Cyborg for me. Cyborg feels like the only character in this whole slate that feels like he got none of Whedon work. Like, his arc, the way that he talks, the way that he interacts, his story, it feels like Zack's interpretation of Cyborg. The depressed, lonely, Frankenstein-ish, wrestling with identity guy. Like, all the other characters have their moments of hope and of levity and of self-deprecation. Cyborg doesn't really get a whole lot of that. For a good portion of the movie, Cyborg is just, as his dad said, brooding. Like, he's just man in a hoodie brooding over what happened to him. I just kind of wish that Zack would have, even though I know that's the way Zack would have gone with it, I wish that Joss would have punched him up a little bit, especially in his interactions with Flash, which was something we heard on the set of the impromptu set visit that we did. I would have liked to have seen more of that. He has some good moments with Superman, which they can be relatable because they both, are born out of certain things. But, man, I don't need dark, sad, moody Victor Stone. I really don't. Not when I've got a characterization of him on Teen Titans that is joyful and happy and comedic relief all the time.
Well, a couple things. One, what you're saying fits in with what kind of the way Ray Fisher would kind of talk about it. Like, he really had an affinity towards Zack. I'm not saying he had anything against Joss, but he really, really talked about Zack a lot.
Dude showed up to Comic-Con and I love Zack Snyder shirt.
Joe Morton, that played his dad, he said, I only went in for my reshoots were not extensive at all. But then when you think about what the character of Cyborg is in this movie, he's a heavy CGI character. There's not so much that you can change. So I think because of that, that's probably why we didn't get as much of Joss working on him, because it would just be too much, too difficult. I do think that the scene of him and Flash digging up Superman's body, because at that scene he's covered up, that is a Joss scene. And that's the most interaction he had with Barry. There is levity there, and there is a moment for them to kind of bond and show their growth as characters together. So I think that's the only really big Cyborg scene for Joss.
Right, and we know that the scene that they saw being filmed was the rooftop scene.
Yeah.
So.
And that I don't think they really did much with that one. I think what you saw there was pretty much was Dak shot.
Right. So my not so good. There's a film on Joss Whedon's filmography. It's called Age of Ultron. And, you know, I think he did the villain better in Age of Ultron than he did here. Because Steppenwolf and Ultron are pretty much the same guy. Their computer graphics are done pretty much to the same level. And instead of mini Ultron bots, we have parademons. And we have children fleeing a city that is being destroyed. And there are way too many parallels here to Age of Ultron and the look and the feel of Age of Ultron. And poor Chernobyl. I mean, they get destroyed even in Transformers movies. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's, you know, just give the city a break. I mean, they had a nuclear meltdown. Like, you don't need to keep... Go back to Chicago. Blow Chicago up for, like, the 800th time.
But I... With Steppenwolf, again, I think it's the Cyborg thing. Is like, he's an all-CG character. At least Cyborg, you had, like, motion capture and reference.
But
Steppenwolf is just CG.
But even his dialogue, it's... Like, some of it you can tell is Whedon-esque because of the way that he speaks. But, like, it's a lot of the same type of rhetoric that Ultron used. And the town, using the town as the, for the set piece, has a very Sokovian vibe to it. The little township, the little people in the houses on the outskirts, has very much an Age of Ultron feel to it. That's all Joss. That's not well, Zach. Zach wouldn't have given two craps about people on the outskirts of town.
Well, the town is because of the set piece. I'm just going... All big set pieces, I'm just going to attribute to Zach because you can't really change all that. Now, adding the family, yeah, that probably is... It's Joss. It gives us somebody to, I guess, to be like us in the middle of this that they have... And somebody for them to have to save. Which I get why they did it, but I was like... As soon as they showed up, again, because I've read a whole bunch of reviews, I was like, okay, this is the family that we're going to follow. Now, why are we following them? You never get a why. They just pick this random family, which I'm like, why? We don't need to be with them several times through the movie for them to be saved. All we needed was
like the woman who has her car almost fall off the bridge in Ultron. Like, we don't follow her. We just see her get in her car.
Yeah. All we needed to see from that family was the moment that... you can see when the parademons start buzzing around their house, and then the moment they leave and they haul ass out and get in the truck, that's all you needed. And then they pretty much just get saved after that point. That's it.
But Chad, you would have missed the bug spray moment.
I mean, that was fine. It was a joke that didn't land with me, so I didn't care. Because every time I saw them, I'm like, they're pointless.
But Steppenwolf looks and feels too much like Ultron to me. And he doesn't feel as well written, and he doesn't feel as well executed, because like you said, you couldn't.
Yeah.
But it had the same look and feel. That whole set piece had the same look and feel of Sokovia done on a really worst level. And so that was kind of my not so good.
And I think a lot of that also falls to the fact that your villain is Steppenwolf and not like Darkseid.
Who gets name dropped.
He does get name dropped, but the reason we don't get Darkseid is because they wanted to build to him for a Justice League 2, which is all well and good. But then Batman vs. Superman happens and you're like, you crap the bed and you change everything.
And so, now you change it to a post-credit stinger.
Not even that. So you're left with Steppenwolf, who has never been a major character, a major villain. You've ramped him up to try to be that, but he just comes off as like, he's just this strong guy. That's it. He's this strong guy that wants to take over the world. You don't know why. You don't know anything else about him.
Oh, he has the same motivation as the Sleepy Elf.
Yeah, pretty much.
He wants to plunge the world back into darkness and chaos. And
He wants to make the world apocalypse. Right. You just don't know why.
He hates humanity. And humanity is flawed and does not deserve, whether it's the Amazonians or the Atlanteans or the humans, that they don't deserve mother. Don't deserve access to mother.
I don't even think it's that. I think it's, he thinks it's his...
No, he goes on that rant.
But he also goes on a rant about it, like, it's basically his birthright to have this planet. And, but he doesn't really say anything else. I don't think he cares about humans or anything. He just wants the planet. And I think what they're trying to go for is that, you know, Apocalypse, Darkseid has Apocalypse, and in this reality, he's Darkseid's nephew, and he's tired of being under his uncle's thumb, so he wants his own world, and this is his birthright. This is the one he wants to be like Darkseid, and all these little puny people have showed up and messing up his plan, so I'm going to kill all y'all and take the plan and make it Apocalypse, and I can rival Darkseid. I think that's what they're going for, because none of that shit is said, so we don't know.
By the way, Chad, how long is Batman operating on his own to figure out what the heck is going on and why these bugs are flying around?
No one gives a definitive time, so when that happens, my default is, okay, it's been like 6 months. That's just
kind of... At any point over those 6 months, Chad, could he have not picked up the phone and called Diana?
He was playing email tag work.
Because they go on a nice little walk there by the lake, where she explains exactly what the parademons are and how they operate and why they're here.
That's true.
So, if he was, while he was busy communicating with her and letting her know about her picture of her dead boyfriend, couldn't he at some point have asked, hey, I've run into these flying bug things. You're, you know, older than I am. Do you have any idea what this is about? See, instead, we have to wait till the Eternal Flame burns up in Athens and gives off the signal. And
okay, so this is just me in my head, because again, we're not giving all this.
No.
So I'm assuming it's been 6 months since Superman died in Batman vs. Superman. I don't think Batman met a parademon until, oh, about, you know, the last month before we saw this movie. So what the hell they've been doing between now and then, I don't know. But I think that's where we're at.
Because she gives him a really quick explanation. Like she
yeah,
just,
yeah.
They just walk around the lake and go, nope, it's not something that's coming. It's already here. And like he took one box and he's on his way to get the other one. And
now we got
to
find the third.
And now we got to find the third. Like, you know, like he sits there for months trying to figure out what Luther's journal means with these three squares in it. It never occurred to him to ask the person who was older than him. Like, he couldn't have shot her an email at some point and go, hey, I found this interesting stuff in Luther's diary. Could you help me decipher it?
Yeah, that might be part of the what was cut out of the movie stuff.
Could be, possibly. I mean, we were on a mandate to be under 2 hours, so. Yeah. All right, so Chad, what is your bad? Cover your good and your not so good. What is your bad?
Okay.
Mr. Elfman.
So everybody's going to think I'm really, really petty on this. And you know what? Quite frankly, I don't give a damn if you do. I didn't mind most of the score, but there, every time the Batman 89 or John Williams theme played in some form or fashion, I sat there and if anybody were to look at me during the movie, anytime those themes played, I frowned. Like, and my frown got progressively more animated every time it happened. Because, as I've said before, I like the themes from the Zimmer theme. Particularly the Man of Steel one. If you gave me more of that, I wouldn't have liked not getting the Batman theme. But I will sacrifice the Batman theme for the Man of Steel theme. Because I think that theme is awesome and it's perfect for the Superman. But I really, really like that Batman theme. I'm the only one. I still listen to the goddamn theme to this day. Oh, like, you know, once a month it just pops up in my playlist. Or when I read comics, Batman comics, that's the theme I go to. So to just completely scrap this one, it just was really like, it really, really bothered me. I think I would have been better if he had just made another Batman theme for this Batman. I wouldn't have liked that either, but I would have been more accepting. Just hearing the old 89 theme, which I love.
With the Batmobile and with him zimming through the streets and shooting parademons.
I mean, they play it when he's looking down at the gargoyle, looking down at Gordon. It's like a classic Batman pose. You play that song. I get it, Danny Elfman. You made what is considered the definitive Batman song. Great. However, there's another Batman theme that fit better with this guy that you could have played right there. And everybody... While people don't... I don't think people know the, like, fanfare March version of the theme, because they don't really play it in Batman vs. Superman. the cores are basically the same. When people would have heard it, they would have probably had a reaction because they'd have been like, "Oh, it's from that thing." But you could have played it in a better way, and then got people onto it. So, is it sour grapes for me? Yeah, probably. But you know what? Young Kick rocks. Every time it happened, I got mad, and I'm still gonna be mad. I like this movie, so every time I'm going to watch this movie from now on, I'm still going to be mad that I have to listen to those themes. So, yeah.
This is an easier buy for you, though. This DVD and the soundtrack?
I mean, you say easier buy. Like, I didn't buy Batman vs. Superman the day it came out. But yes, I don't have to think about a bot. I don't have to think about buying this. Better yet, I saw Batman vs. Superman, and before I left, like, my daughter saw the second trailer. She's like, "I want to go see that movie." So, I saw it, and at the point I saw it, I'm like, "I cannot take this little girl to see this movie." She's seen it by now, but she saw it at home in like pieces. She wanted to go see it in the theater. She was highly upset that I wouldn't take her. This one, outside of that one scene that the parademon pops up in the window, this is fine. She's good for this.
Indeed. So, Chad, Wonder Woman. She's an ancient being. Let me take you back, Chad, to a car ride we took from New Orleans to Baton Rouge. We recorded a podcast in the wake of our screening for Wonder Woman. And I brought up the fact that at the very end of Wonder Woman, there is this very triumphant moment of her standing in front of a clock and getting ready to launch herself out into frame, where she talks about the fact that there was good in Steve Trevor, and that light and that promise and that hope of humanity that Steve Trevor lit inside of her propelled her to stand with man and to fight, and then she launches into frame ready to go into battle. However, last time we see her in Dawn of Justice, she's standing next to Clark Kent's grave, talking about how mankind had beaten her down and defeated her, and made her go away in exile for 100 years. You told me on this car ride that no one would remember this, and that it would be erased, and that they would not even comment on it at any point going forward. You even sent me tweets and links to websites and articles where Patty Jenkins talked about the need to revitalize the character in the wake of her Dawn of Justice framework, that they wanted to bring hope and levity and joy to the character, and that final monologue was indicative of that. Where do we find her at the end, at the beginning of Dawn of Justice, Chad?
The beginning of Dawn of Justice? Like actual Dawn of Justice?
Oh, the beginning of Justice League.
The beginning of Justice. She's standing on what looks like a justice statue, and she busts up a terrorist group.
And when's the first time she meets Cyborg, Chad? What does she tell Cyborg, Chad? How does she bond with him over desire?
Oh, that she's like been in the shadows and yes, something like that.
Their desire to be exiled.
Yeah.
That she has been exiled from humanity. She has cut herself off from humanity for 100 years. Ben Affleck, Batfleck, hits her with an insult about the fact that she exiled herself for 100 years.
No, he didn't. No, he said, "I never heard of you until this happened, and you've been doing so. Why is that? Why have you been in the shadows?" I'm gonna let you go.
I'm telling you that they made and continued the continuity of her having been gone for 100 years, which does not jive with Patty Jenkins' version of the character. It does not jive with Patty Jenkins' rejection of that at the end of Wonder Woman, a movie that was infinitely better than most others in the DCEU, and set the character on a path that made her a worldwide sensation. Why? Why would you continue with the lie that she spent 100 years in exile? Especially when you're going to do a Wonder Woman 2 that's set in the Cold War of the 1980s, which, last time I checked, is not 100 years after World War II. Or World War I. Sorry. Why? Why would we continue with this continuity era?
Can I go now?
Yes, because this is beyond insulting. Why would Wonder Woman walk away from humanity for 100 years and allow hundreds of wars to be fought without standing beside someone? Did poor Steve Trevor die for nothing? Like, did she have to really take 80 years to figure out, hey, you know what? The guy I loved, like, he died saving humanity. I should probably do the same to honor his memory. Like, did you really take 80 years to figure that out?
I'd just like to record the show that you told me I can go like a minute ago, and they kept going.
Yes, well, this is how this.
I just wanted on the record that that's what happened. Mm-hmm. Okay,
you're clear now. I've gotten it out of my system.
Okay, so I'm gonna start by saying this is how when two people can watch the same thing and get completely different stuff out of it, and it's all the same thing that they're watching. Because what I got from it was. They kept making allusions that she was doing stuff without everybody knowing. That was like her thing. She just didn't want to be known. Because that's why they made a big deal of it at the end. She finally came out so people could see her. So what they're doing is, it's like, and this is what this whole movie is about. It's like soft rebooting of everything. So we gave you a version of in Batman vs. Superman. The star and the director said, no, forget that. She wouldn't do that. So forget what she said right there. But then Justice League comes around and is like, well, shit. You just said this. So you're going to kind of, okay, that's what you want to do. So I have to make these two things jive. So how I'm going to make them jive? Wonder Woman has operated. She's done stuff in the shadow. She has purposely not been seen. She doesn't want to be seen because of something with her feelings towards Steve Trevor. She's still guilty about that. Something like that. They kind of imply that in there. So, in that way, you jive with the whole I love humanity thing, but then you try to jive with the whole I would never really leave humanity thing. So the end result is she's done stuff humanity just don't know. Bam, boom. You might not like it, but that's what we're going with. And that looks tells me you don't like it, but that's what we're going with.
Sir, she said, and I quote, I was so distraught by humanity that I had to walk away for 100 years.
In which movie?
In Dawn of Justice.
Yes, she did.
And then she comes back in Wonder Woman and says that they gave her hope, and Steve Trevor's sacrifice buoyed her to reach new heights that mankind deserved her love and her humility and her kindness. And now they're coming back basically saying that she's been a vigilante for 80 years.
Yeah.
That's your fix to the continuity issue.
Look.
That is almost as bad as Helena tipping over an Infinity Gauntlet and saying, fake. It's almost as bad as, like, Iron Man proposing to Pepper Potts after, you know, being broken up for 2 years.
See, you say all this to me, and every time you say this to me, I'm like, but that worked.
For most of humanity, it worked. It does not work for me.
These things
do not jive, and I have validation that these things do not jive and should have been done better.
Oh, I'm not saying they shouldn't have been done better. I'm like, they should have been some more planning involved in all this. But clearly they wasn't, so that's why we get reboots to start. And I think it's part of my comic book brain, like, you give me small little incremental reboots to get to the way you want to go, I will buy it because I've been doing it all my life. So, like, the least offensive of the ones that you listed off is Hela with the gauntlet. Because it's quick, easy, like, with one word, one action, this is done, and everybody understands what's happened. With the, you don't have to make any mental gymnastics to make this work. The Iron Man one, it doesn't require as much mental gymnastics, that's just gonna come down to personal taste on that one.
And stuff that happened off screen.
Yeah,
so. Probably in a comic book somewhere.
Yeah, so, that one doesn't bother me as much. Now, this one, I got to take some hoops. So I can see where you're coming from. But I'm willing to go through the hoops because I know that they messed up. But they're trying to fix their mess up. and they're trying to fix their mess up in a way that still jives with everything, but get where they want to go. It sucks, but that's what retconning is. You go from something that sucks to try to get to something better, but there are people like me that like continuity, so you have to give me little bridges along the way. They can be kind of stupid bridges if it gets to the good point. I will walk over your stupid bridge.
Love cannot build a bridge that strong, Chad.
I didn't say it was strong. I just said it was stupid. I said it was stupid, but I will walk over it. I walk over it quickly because that's what you want me to do. You know I can't just take my leisurely time because I will fall in. If you say, I have built you this stupid bridge to get you from point A to point B, you just have to hurry along. I will hurry along and we can go on with our lives.
Patty Jenkins came up with a better version of Wonder Woman, and they had to alternate their tape. I guarantee you, Patty was consulted on a lot of those Wonder Woman reshoots.
Yeah, because it.
And I don't know if Juan was consulted on the Aquaman shots. I'm sure he might have. I mean, he'd been on the project already for a while at that point. But, I mean, that's just kind of my thing. The Dawn of Justice, Diana Prince, does not leave you room to do more Wonder Woman stuff. Because she's been gone for 100 years. She walked away from humanity. Even though she was doomed to live amongst it. Because she could not go back home. And the Wonder Woman, when Diana Prince takes the sacrifice of Steve Trevor as a launching pad and continues to use his sacrifice as a reason to continue fighting for men on throughout the ages, the Justice League Wonder Woman is a character who is deathly afraid of leadership. She has followed all of her life. She's never had to be the leader. Even in Wonder Woman, where she had a leadership role, it was a co-lead with Trevor. Trevor was still making the plans. Trevor was still saying, you go here, you go here. She was not the leader. She had followed her mother for her entire time on Thessalonica. Themyscira. So this is a Wonder Woman who is grappling with the idea of taking on the mantle of leader. And how do you lead a people? Because all she's ever seen of leaders are, you know, people like Ares, who are just trying to accomplish a means to an end and don't care about people. They just care about accomplishing their goals. So that's the Wonder Woman we get here. The problem is, if you've been gone for 100 years and now you're going to try and usurp up to a leadership level, that's a large leap for somebody to go to. So you have to have that. You know, which one is it? Is it the Wonder Woman version of the character who's been operating the shadows for 80 years and, you know, stepping into conflicts every now and then, being a vigilante? Or is it the Dawn of Justice Wonder Woman who's been in the shadows and now wants to be a leader?
Well, to that, I think I'll go into a larger point with this movie. This movie, the whole point of this movie was to fix everything that was wrong in Dawn of Justice. Like, not Man of Steel, not anything else. Fix what's wrong with Dawn of Justice.
Do you bleed, Chad?
Look, I don't know how people felt about that scene.
They went there.
But, they did, and you know what? I liked it. I'm glad you brought that point up. I liked it because this is my personal nerd thing. All you goddamn Batman nerds that was like, Batman, if anything Batman vs. Superman gave y'all was definitive proof that Batman would beat Superman. Well, goddammit, this movie says if Superman wants to kill Batman, we find out right here, right now, he can do it if he wants to. And when he told him, do you bleed? I know people hated that line in Batman vs. Superman. I actually liked it. I liked the callback. It's like one of the good callbacks that they put in for Batman vs. Superman, because everything else they ran away from Batman vs. Superman. And they did that because, like, you're harping on this thing with Wonder Woman. In that movie, all three of your major characters, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, were all, I won't say left in a place because Superman's left is dead.
They were all nihilistic.
Yes. And they know now that people don't want that, particularly from those characters. Wonder Woman has vividly shown you that people don't want that. So they had to go ahead and switch that. But this movie is a sequel to Batman vs. Superman, so how do you fix that and still acknowledge that thing? So they pretty much only acknowledge the fact that Superman died, and they forget everything else. And they only touch on the things they have to touch on. Hell, even to the point of the end credit scene, which we haven't talked about at all yet, but this is a spoilers thing. If you've listened this far, you know we're going to spoil every goddamn thing. Luther on the yacht. Because it's not the nervous tick Luther we got in Batman vs. Superman. He, like, as soon as I saw him, I'm like, well, goddamn, I never knew he could look like Lex Luthor. And he's still nerdy Jesse Eisenberg, but just in the few things he said, he came off as a better Lex Luthor, a more comic book friendly version of Lex Luthor than what we got in Batman vs. Superman.
Really, is now really a good time to bring up the idea of Lex Luthor? Really a good time to reference actors who have played Lex Luthor and played good versions of Lex Luthor?
I wouldn't say he played a good version of Lex Luthor. I get that you don't want to bring it up, but I would say that he played the best version of what he was given, but I wouldn't say he played a good version of Lex Luthor. So we can completely, because Superman Returns doesn't exist, we can just push that on out the side, like in Batman 89 when he pushes the mayor out the frame. We can just forget that and just say that Jesse Eisenberg in this 2 minutes came off more as Lex Luthor in this scene.
They did in the entirety of Dawn of Justice.
Yes.
But that's because you're building to that place.
Are we?
Yes. You're building to that place. The shaving of the head and the fact that Steppenwolf returns to Earth eases his mind. He is vanquished of all of the technology talk.
I forgot all about that crap.
Yeah. He is vanquished of all the technology talk that is running through Cyborg's head. He's melded together from his experience right in the resurrection chamber. That's how he's hooked into Steppenwolf. That's why he's chanting about the painting and he is coming and all of that. And so his mind has been returned to normal function after Steppenwolf arrives. That's how he's able to concoct a plan to break out of prison. It's how he's able to insinuate the idea of forming an Injustice League that we will never see. But, although, you know, Injustice versus Superman would not be a bad way to go for Matthew Vaughn. But, you know, that's what I took from that. That Steppenwolf showing up and being defeated eased his mind.
That never crossed my mind. But you know what? That's as good as anything else. Again, you give me a bridge, you can call it stupid. If you're taking me to A to B, I will take it. I don't even think that's that stupid. So I would gladly cross this bridge of moderate evidence.
So, Chad, let's now that we have put the Justice League to bed, the next film on the horizon is James Wan's Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
Dude Bro Aquaman. The next film after that is Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman 2. We also have Shazam, which is currently going into production.
Yeah, I think we get Shazam before we'll get Wonder Woman 2.
And we have Suicide Squad 2 also getting ready to go into production. And we keep hearing rumors about a Man of Steel 2, but we haven't gotten anything confirmed. And we have the Batman that's floating around there with or without Ben Affleck attached. It's going to be quite the game of musical chairs for a while. What do we think the future of the DCEU is? Because, like, for me, we need more standalone pieces that work as a singular movie. Slight hints at the overall structure. And we need to work on developing and fleshing out these characters in their individual worlds. We need a true phase 2.
Well, like with everything DC, the picture is murky. Because, like you said, the only things in active production right now for DC are Aquaman, which is in post. Shazam, which they're actively casting, will start shooting early next year. And Wonder Woman, because they're done with the script, but that's an active production. After that, it's really open.
I mean, Matt Reeves just started work on the Batman idea because he's been in post and then on a publicity tour for Apes.
Yeah.
And who knows how much time he's going to spend trying to get it awards.
Exactly. So And I,
but you know Jake Gyllenhaal, great guy.
I'm gonna get to that one, but I don't know what Warner Brothers' expectation is for this. There was just another article that came out today that that quoted insiders from Warner Brothers. And quick aside, I think a big part of Warner Brothers' problem is that there's so many divisions in there, and people want to one-up them, and they will leak whatever source they have to whoever. I think that is a big problem, and that speaks to leadership at the top. And until they fix that,
until they fix the roller coaster guy,
yeah. Until they fix that, we're gonna DC's always gonna appear fractured because Warner Brothers is fractured. Everybody probably is. Everybody probably has their own factions inside, but there's leadership that says we're not doing this stuff and we're gonna keep it in house. But Warner Brothers doesn't have that. But the report that came out today is like they're really nervous about the box office for Justice League. Particularly after getting the Rotten Tomatoes scores release, and as of us getting out of the movie, it's at 36%, which I think is absurd.
It's a little bit higher than Dawn of Justice.
Yeah, but this movie is way better than Dawn of Justice. Like, if you don't want to say it's fresh, fine. But
it should be in the 50s
at least. I mean, it should be a 50-50 movie. Audiences, I think, will be higher than that. So, it depends on how much money this is going to make. I think
on $300 million.
Budget. Yeah, that's the word. So, you're looking at having to hit $1 billion.
$600 to hit profit, and everything after that is...
Yeah, I don't think they're going to hit $1 billion, but I don't think they have to, because they overshot themselves with Wonder Woman and It. So Warner Brothers is good financially as long as this movie can break even. Now, that's not what they want. They want what they really don't want right now, according to that article, is to get crapped on by Thor. That is their thing. Like,
so they're fearing a third straight weekend where Thor Ragnarok wins.
Or? No, Justice League is going to win this weekend. They're fearing that Thor is going to make more money overall than Justice League. And in their words, it's like they're taking this, Marvel has this B-tier character, and if it makes more money than our Justice League, it's embarrassing. And I don't know how they'll handle embarrassment. Like, if it makes more money than Thor, I think they're good enough to stay the course, whatever that course is right now. If it doesn't, even though by all accounts this movie should not make more money than Thor, given everything that went into it, but just off their perception, because it is Justice League, if it makes less than Thor, I mean, everything can go out the window besides what's in open production, because as they've proven, they're completely reactionary. So I don't know what is next for the DCEU. What they should do is go ahead and fast track this Flash movie. I would not make a Flashpoint, but fast track the Flash movie. Batman and, personally, Superman, get those all going.
Right, but doesn't Flashpoint make sense given the background you're giving the character? Like, you're tying the character so closely to his father and to the crime his father is convicted of, and him trying to work to get his father out of prison. So if you're going to do Flashpoint, the very basis of Flashpoint is born out of Barry's desire to go back and fix the one event that cost him his father and to have his family reunited. So that idea works well with doing a Flashpoint movie the way he is presented in this film.
Yes and no. I don't think that's the first Flash movie you should make.
No, not at all. It would be like doing Civil War for the first Captain America movie. It would make no sense. But it is a canonical reboot waiting to happen, which they might need. It is set up perfectly and beautifully by what they did in this movie in the simple 15 minutes he's on screen, and it's already been announced. Like, it's easy to do. And you don't have to. Marvel proved with Age of Ultron. Marvel proved with Civil War. Marvel's gonna prove with Infinity War. You can take the name of a comic book arc and adapt pieces of it, and you don't have to stay faithful beat by beat to the adaptation. It's the same way with Star Wars, right? if we get to a point where we find out that Kylo Ren and Rey are related, and their brother and sister, we know that there are going to be all kinds of parallels to the Jenna and Jason Solo story. It just will never be called, you know, Jenna and Jason Solo. But that's something that's in the EU. Disney has said time and time again that they can cull parts of the EU and bring them into reality now. They just don't want to make the Legends canon because you're tied to a whole bunch of stuff they had no hand in. So, it's the same way here. You can do a Flashpoint movie, but even if the only element of that that you take is the schism and trying to prevent his mother's death, it's still, in spirit, a Flashpoint movie and works and functions for everything you want to do with it.
I don't think
Robert Zemeckis is the guy to direct it, but, you know.
No, I agree with everything you said. It's just, one, when you think of Flashpoint from the comics, and I had somebody point this out to me, most of the things that people remember are not the things to deal with the Flash outside of him going back in time and stopping Reverse Flash. Everybody remembers the Atlantean Amazon War. Everybody remembers the Thomas Wayne Batman. Those are the things that everybody remembers. Nobody thinks about the Flashpoint stuff. So I do think if they did it, it would be sort of in name only. Oh, and they think about the whole resetting of the thing. So I think they'll take it in name only. I think he'll go back in time and stop his mother's death. And then what happens after that? What I don't think, but they shouldn't do it now, because we just got introduced to this Barry. Like, give him a movie before you do Flashpoint.
I would agree, but they're like, the earliest you get this movie is 2019 or 2020, and by then there might not be a universe to save.
Well, that goes to the other thing. I don't think you need to retcon it with Flashpoint. That's like an extreme retconning thing. And as I sat here and watched this movie, they're like soft rebooting everything through this that you don't need Flashpoint.
But we've got a guy, okay? Let's just say that they stick with everything. We've got a guy who does not know whether or not he wants to stay playing Batman. Okay? We've got rumors about Jake Gyllenhaal wanting to be favored by Matt Reeves. And that kind of jives, because if you've seen Nightcrawler, you've seen the paralyzed leg movie that he's in right now about the Boston Marathon bombing. You've seen a lot of his dramatic work. You know that he has the chops to pull it off. But my thought has been that in this continuity, in this world, with a Batman who specifically says in this movie, I can't do this now. Like, I can barely do this now. Like, I've been doing this for 20 years. I'm barely hanging on. You've opened up the door for retirement, and you've already established a desire to do a Nightwing movie with the guy who did Lego Batman. There's your transition. You do not need to recast the Batman. Do not have to go down the rabbit hole of another Twitter fire over whoever you end up casting. All you have to do is either Batgirl or Nightwing, or if you want to go really crazy and like melt the internet and break everybody's mind, go get Joseph Gordon-Levitt to stop playing Sandman at some point for David Goyer and come in and play Nightwing. And you toy with the idea that maybe Bale's Batman and Affleck's Batman are one and the same. And you do the passing of the torch of the mantle. Because that's set up.
So, in theory, that is the easiest thing to do. However,
it's going to have to happen in Marvel.
Well,
they're going to have to hand off their batons to other people to take on the mantle of Iron Man. And we know Bucky's picked up the shield 3 times. I mean, they're going to do it.
But I do think they're going to do, Marvel's going to do something like that. However, and I've been saying it forever, I don't think they're killing Cap. I don't think they're killing Tony. Why? Because, yeah, while they can temporarily pass this on, you're not killing Tony Stark and Steve Rogers because you want those names.
You're not killing Bruce Wayne either. There's a whole Batman Beyond TV series that everybody loves, and the whole nature of it is old man Bruce guiding a young Nightwing. Like, why can't you do that story? I mean, it's the end of Nolan's trilogy. The end of Nolan's trilogy is Grayson getting into the Batcave and Bruce Wayne sitting in Paris enjoying a nice cafe latte with Catwoman. Like, it could be the same way here. Like, Affleck's Batman could go off into retirement, sip Mai Tai somewhere, and a kid can come in and take over his Nightwing. And call me, beat me if you want to reach me.
Batman Beyond 1 is not as popular as everybody thinks. It's popular among geeks because everybody knows it. But if we pull somebody out the street and say, who's Terry McGinnis? They're going to look at you. And then they're just going to keep looking at you and like, well, who's Terry McGinnis? So, but my main crux with that is this movie was the beginning of the Justice League. You don't get rid of Bruce Wayne Batman in the beginning. The point that they made him, oh, yeah, we've got that, whatever. Again, you're retconning shit all kind of ways. Get somebody else. And just don't mention it again.
The roadie theory.
Yeah, just do it. Yeah.
I'm here, deal with it.
Yeah, just get somebody else. Don't mention it again. And just move on. In theory, in this world, yes, retirement and passing the mantle makes the most sense. But I like Dick Grayson. I like him a lot. I don't want to see a Dick Grayson Batman. Not with Wonder Woman. Not with Clark Kent Superman. I want to see Bruce Wayne Batman. And I really and truly think Ben Affleck is done. Like, this is it. He's done. And quite frankly, if he wants to be gone, I'm fine with it. But just recast, move on.
And this weekend's box office will be a huge determinant of that.
Oh, I think Affleck's gone either way.
Well, I mean, the rumors seem to suggest that, like, Reeves had his idea of who he wanted and he wants a trilogy. So...
And there's no earth that Ben Affleck is doing the trilogy.
Now, there's also the possibility, however remote, and no one wants to hear this, but there's also the possibility that at some point, Reeves' movies take place before Dawn of Justice. It's been a Batman that's been operating for 20 years, right?
I mean, that's fine, too.
So, it's been a Batman who's been operating for 20 years. You don't necessarily have to have Affleck to tell stories of a younger Batman.
Mm-hmm. But if you do that, I don't... if you do that and you do end up doing Justice League 2, Affleck's not going to put the cowl back on. It'll just have to be this guy, and we'll just have to pretend that he's older. That's just...
But, I mean, Affleck... I mean, if it is, in fact, Gyllenhaal, I mean, they're basically the same age, right? So
no, Affleck's, like, 9 years older. Jake's, like, around my age.
So, I mean, it could in theory work.
I mean, it could. I'm going to go on record right now, and normally I don't do this for casting, but I'm going to go on record right now and say, I don't want Jake Gyllenhaal's Batman. And my reason is completely superficial, and I don't care if any of y'all like it. If you took, there's a picture of the Justice League standing up there with Zach and Jeff Johns and Charles Roman. And you look at them, and they're all these big, towering, superhero-looking guys. Jake Gyllenhaal is not that.
He was that. He has been known to lose weight and gain weight for roles. Did you see him in that boxing movie that he made?
I'm not talking about him.
Southpaw or whatever.
I'm not talking about his physique. I'm strictly talking about his height. Because Henry Cavill is a big mountain. He is a big, towering guy. And he will tower over Jake Gyllenhaal. Like, if this is a completely separate Batman that has no Justice League, Jake Gyllenhaal can be Batman all he wants. But for them, Batman has to have a physical presence.
What have I been saying about Indiana Jones for a while? That we needed to do the stories between the young adventures of Indiana Jones and what we got at the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's a whole bunch of material out there, auxiliary art material out there that you can mine for stories about younger Indiana Jones, and old man grandpa can still be sitting around the fireplace telling stories to his grandkids. Mm-hmm. And it's a way for him to keep his thing. It's the same way with this. If you want to do the origin story for Affleck's Batman If you want to produce his version of the Joker, Batman story, or whatever, you have 20 years and wind-up penguins and all the rest of it that you can mine, and you don't have to have Affleck to do it. There's no rule that says, and it's the same way with Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel's set in the 90s. It's going to be set before Iron Man 1. It'll be the first Marvel movie to do that. There's no rule that is saying, I have to keep my movie 6 months after Justice League. Right. Right? So you go back into the past, it makes recasting easier. And I think it would be easier on Affleck, too. Because I think it would make it, like, what's Disney's great fear about Indiana Jones, right? That if we recast, the burden and the weight of that on a young actor is going to be tremendous. And it's going to be really hard, and the standards are going to be really high. But if we soft reboot it by having a younger River Phoenix type version of the character at a different point in his life, they'll be more accepting of that version of Indiana Jones because it's leading you up to the Harrison Ford point. It might be the same way here, and then it's easier for Affleck to commit to doing one Justice League movie. You can get him to come back for one Justice League movie. He doesn't have to sign a 3-film deal, a 5-film deal, a 7-film deal, an 8-film deal, whatever it is. He only has to do one Justice League movie that stays in the continuity of the Aquaman and the Wonder Woman 2 and the Suicide Squad 2. Like, that's the way it works out for everybody involved.
Look, I can get down with that. But, you know, we just don't know which way they're going to go with it.
I mean, that's the easiest way. Ben can go back to doing either. He can go back to rehab. He can go back to working on himself. He can go back to, you know, turning Live by Night into an HBO series instead of a movie. He can do whatever he wants to. He's free of the burden of being Batman in a heavy-duty way. Matt Reeves can go and make his Batman trilogy, and they can inform and fill in the dots of the Batman story. And then when they're ready to do a second Justice League movie, he can walk right in. He can spend his 6 months in the gym getting ripped and ready. He can show up, collect his paycheck, do his thing, go home. I mean, that's to me what works out for everybody involved. And it works out for Indiana Jones as well.
I'm for it. I just want them to...
Clarity. I want clarity. I don't want this wishy-washy going from, I'm the luckiest guy in the world, this is the best job ever, too. It's something I'm considering.
I mean, I want that from Warner Brothers as a whole. Just, you know what you're doing, just go and do it. I don't understand why they would. I mean, I know there's a lot of money involved. I don't understand why they're so hesitant to move forward with things because of Justice League when they knew a year ago what they had in Justice League. And they worked for a year to get it to a better place. And they had to know because of that, the movie might be coherent, but there's going to be some fallout of that. So Justice League is, after Batman vs. Superman, Justice League was a necessary evil. You just had to get through it. We're here. We're in the process of getting through it.
And now you have hope, and you have characters who are likable, and you can journey on.
Like, even the worst reviews that I've read, and I've read some bad ones, and I don't understand what those people saw. Most of them said that they like at least 2 or 3 of the characters. Maybe not all of them, but there is something there with the characters. And I think if you had a movie, like if you took this movie and you pushed it back into the summer and gave them really enough time to rework the things they really want to rework, I think you have a movie that everybody walks out and was like, I like this movie. I like these characters. Let's have another one. But because you were stuck with what you were stuck with, you have to...
Chasing a release date.
Yeah, you...
Signing up for shooting 2 weeks after Dawn of Justice.
And that was a mistake you made at this point years ago. So once Batman vs. Superman came out, you knew what you had. You just had to take this hit and now progress. Don't get shell-shocked by the box office.
Don't get blindsided. Don't act like it's the Rotten Tomatoes score surprises you. Don't act like the box office surprises you. Just take your hit and move. And
just keep moving forward
with whatever plan you have.
Yeah. I watching the movie, I mean, I'm shocked for them, for this current Rotten Tomatoes score. Again, like, if you said it's not fresh, okay, I can get that. But for it to be...
You're more toward Jim's line.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
It's okay.
It's okay. I mean, personally, I think it's better than the average movie, but, I mean, I think at bare minimum, it is an average movie. So, like, sit on the line. Somewhere around 50% of where it is. This 36 stuff, like, I think people really went out of their way to, like...
Knives
hate,
out.
To hate this movie, because the way they described it, I just didn't see it. And granted, maybe it's because I went in, I know that this is still a Zach-heavy movie, so I expect a certain look of it.
Zach needs to go. Okay. Zach could be the Roger Deakins of cinematography if he so chooses. Like, if he just gave up the directing thing and was just like, I'm going to work as a DP.
Yeah, he can't. I don't think... I don't want him directing CGI anymore, because I think they need to step that up. Because it's the same... All these movies have a CGI aesthetic that
is his. And a CGI villain.
Yeah.
Ares... Enchantress, Doomsday.
Yeah, they need to move. I'm going to say they need to move away from that. Even though I know, like, the major villains people want to see are like Darkseid, Brainiac, and Darkseid especially is going to be CG. But it needs to be like motion capture and done like Apes is done, and not like just straight up video game guy.
All right. So, your final opinion on box office.
I don't know. Like,
I'm going 125.
I think it'll get over the predicted 110. 125 sounds good. Just to be a little bit optimistic, I'll go 130. But I think it'll get more than 110. If it gets over 120, I think they'll be happy. And it just depends on what word of mouth is.
Right, and we'll know a lot of that tonight after when we get the box office receipts tomorrow and know how many it did, how much it did in Thursday night previews.
What? Outside of Thor, the other thing they're going to be worried about is next week, because theoretically they should win next week. However, it's Thanksgiving and Coco comes out, and that's a family thing, and
it's getting amazing reviews.
Yeah, so they just got to be prepared to take that hit too. They can lose to Coco, but between now and Star Wars, it's only them and Coco, and it could just keep running. It could have legs. It just depends on how the people feel about it.
And how the people feel about it will determine how much of the DCEU we get going forward.
Yeah.
All right. That'll about do it for this week's podcast. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At The Mets Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.